Find this and other great shows at the Aviation Media Network.
TheVoicesInYourHead.com.
This is XTP Media.
Hello, everybody. It's me, Mrs. G, aka Claire Opsbird. You're listening to Extended for the best in aerospace news, views, and interviews. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to the latest episode of Extended. Here are your hosts, Peter Johnson from XTP Media, Gareth Stringer from Global Aviation Resource, and Tim Robinson from the Royal Aeronautical Society.
Hello, and welcome to Extended Episode 24. My name is Gareth Stringer. I'm the editor of Global Aviation Resource, and yes, for the first time, and it remains to be seen whether it's the only time, I am your captain this evening. So it's my first time in the left-hand seat. Bear with me. It's just to freshen things up a bit and to get a new voice leading the way. But I'm not on my own, luckily. I've got some pretty experienced help with me. So in the right-hand seat, my trusty co-pilot, Tim Robinson, Editor-in-Chief of Aerospace. How are you, Tim?
I'm very well, thanks. Hello, everybody.
Thanks for looking after me. And just behind us, and if you're a younger listener, you might need to ask what a flight engineer is. But believe me, Peter Johnson from XTP is our flight engineer, and we wouldn't get off the ground without him. So thank goodness he's joining us. Peter, how are you?
I'm very good, Gareth. And how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I've missed a couple, but it's good to be back, and looking forward to what is going to be a pretty packed episode. 24, can you believe it?
I
unbelievable.
Know.
That's two years worth, isn't
amazing.
It? Yeah, crikey. Yeah,
right. We're still here.
We are. It's all going to get spoiled now because I'm looking after it. This could be the last one.
Oh no, it's very exciting. Very exciting times. It's great to have you back as well, Gareth.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Right, let's crack on with some news. There's a lot of it, so we've had to pick the biggies and the stuff that's caught our attention. And you're probably not going to be surprised to hear that we are going to lead with MH370, the missing Malaysian Airlines 777 flight that was due from Kuala Lumpur to Beijing. The aircraft's been missing since the 8th of March, 239 people on board. Tim, I'm going to come to you. This has been a really quite bizarre scenario of sort of information, misinformation. You know, have they found it? Have they not found it? Things are going to change probably by the time people listen to this, but just give us a quick resume, if you will, of what we do actually know.
Right. Okay. Well, what we do know is obviously not much. But as you say, on the 8th of March, a 777 from Malaysian Airlines took off from Kuala Lumpur, heading for Beijing, with 239 people on board. Somewhere between the handover between Malaysian ATC and Vietnam ATC, something happened. It turned off its course. The transponder and the ACORS was either disabled deliberately or had some kind of mechanical or technical failure, and it took a left turn, headed back over Malaysia and Thailand. They picked it up on their radar, and then it just disappeared. It went out of ground-based radar. So, it's been a global news story, really, really unprecedented. Every day we're getting the daily briefings from the investigators. it's been unprecedented for a number of reasons. You know, the idea that a modern aircraft, big airliner, you know, with all its systems on, can just sort of vanish like that. People who obviously are know more about aviation know that there is, you know, that ground-based radar has a certain range, and once you run out, go out of that, then you're reliant on GPS and all the rest of it. And I think in this day and age, what we're lulled into a false sense of security because, you know, you've got apps like Plane Finder and Flight Track 24 and all the rest of it. You think, oh, okay, you know, you can find an aircraft anywhere on the globe now. So it's just demonstrated how big the world is, and you know what the you know sort of how limited even today our surveillance capabilities are, and it's also just thrown up a whole load of you know theories. Some of them really sort of crackpot and are just sort of really sort of out there. Really sort of do feel for what the family is going through because at the moment. It's you know that although they've said that they've done a little bit of satellite investigation for the satellite data and concluded that it has crashed, has gone down in somewhere in the Indian Ocean, in the Southern Indian Ocean. That was from using satellite data from the ACAR system that was kind of pinging, even though no messages were being sent. There's no closure yet. You know they haven't actually sort of found the wreckage. It's like looking for a not a needle in a haystack, a needle in France.
Tim, you mentioned some of the crackpot theories. I just wanted to ask you, what have you made of the media coverage, particularly the mainstream media coverage? Because some of it's been quite extraordinary, really, hasn't it?
I think yeah. I mean there's two things to look at here. I mean, first off is that the you know, there's a 24/7 news culture, and so you know the people are looking for alternative angles. So it means that the thing comes back with from different angles, and then you know, obviously Twitter and the blogosphere and everything kind of gets elevated. So everyone's got to try to find a new angle every 5 seconds, and sometimes there isn't any news. And another thing, you know, when you're going through this thing, also I think that there's a lot of, you know, a lot of flack being directed at the, you know, Malaysian Airlines, Malaysian government, etc., etc. They've been placed in a really unprecedented situation, and you know, all kind of conspiracy theories sort of flowing around there. Of, you know, it's a different, slightly different culture, but they're also, you know, in the position of trying, you know, trying to explain something that is at the moment unexplainable, you know, of somebody possibly deliberately trying to hide an aircraft's path.
Yeah.
So, you know, even if it happened in the U.S., you know, the U.S. 9/11, we've still got conspiracy theories today saying that, you know, oh, F-16 shot one of the aircraft down. Oh, the Pentagon wasn't hit by that plane. It was a missile. All these conspiracy theories of people sort of disbelief. So I think a good thing here would be to cut them some slack and say, well, you know, if it happened anywhere, people would, you know, the authorities would still be in this situation of, we're going to reveal a bit more information. Oh, actually, you know, this is changed. The story's changed. You know, the moving objects is a good one. If they're looking for the objects floating on the sea. Well, you know, you're in the most remote area of the world. So by the time the planes get there from what the satellites have detected, it's drifted. And two, it's one of the worst places for weather. So yeah. Getting down there and actually sort of seeing for sort of small pieces of debris, what you're looking for on the surface, that's a challenge in itself.
Peter, what's your feeling about all of this? It does seem to many people, I guess, almost inconceivable that there just hasn't been any firm news yet, but from what we're seeing as this sort of unfolds or doesn't unfold, and obviously as Tim's just said, there's not necessarily any sign that this is going to come to an end anytime soon.
Yeah, I think just looking from a media perspective, it's quite interesting to see the dynamics of the story and how it's unfolding. And of course, in the world of social media, with Twitter and Facebook and everybody else having a view, all of those views seem to balance out. So somebody suggesting something that's slightly odd or unusual just gets blown out of proportion. So there seems to be an awful lot of scaremongering going on. Unfortunately, as Tim said, maybe not helped by the way that it's been managed initially, but certainly the way things are unfolding now, the technical evidence that's being used, certainly the satellite data, and you know, from a parochial view, the involvement of the British has been very complimentary. And I know we've got a pilot down on the P3s there with the Australians, I think.
Yes.
On secondment, Flight Lieutenant Eric King. So, you know, you look at the spectrum of countries involved, you look at the aircraft out there searching, you look at the ships. And if you've seen any of the videos of the ships going through the troughs there, I think you can understand how difficult a task this really is. So, as you said, I think our thoughts go out to the unfortunate people who are waiting for news whilst we all watch this odd mystery unfold.
I'd just like to echo Peter's sort of observation there in the satellite, getting it down to its rough location where it kind of the flight ended was absolutely groundbreaking piece of investigation from Inmarsat, which is actually based in London. Their HQ is in London, satellite company Inmarsat, and the AIIB. Really, you know, amazing stuff that you wouldn't have even considered, say, or well, even sort of 5, even 10 years ago. Of this is how to find an aircraft.
It's amazing stuff, and look, I'm sure there's going to be, you know, more twists and turns to this story. But hopefully, as you both said, you know, that the aim has got to be, you know, resolution for the family and friends of everybody that's involved. And I guess for what it's worth, and we'll move on to another item now. But yeah, let's hope that there is some, you know, that something concrete happens, and our thoughts are certainly with everybody involved. Something a little bit closer to home, Peter. Now, tensions between the USA and Russia, kind of certainly on a sort of political level, are running pretty high as a result of what's been happening in, you know, the Ukraine, Crimea, and such like. And there's even some people even saying, you know, are we on the brink potentially of a return to the Cold War? But there's a kind of nice flip side to this story, isn't there? Because despite all of that happening on one side, they've got this incredibly strong, very, very solid relationship in terms of cooperating on space program.
Yeah, it's a real dichotomy, this one. We've seen in the past week that NATO has two AWACS aircraft. I think they're flying over Poland and Romania, which I'm sure is raising tensions. And then we also saw the deployment of 12 F-16s as well to the region by the Americans, which for all intents and purposes is not too tough a stance to take, but certainly suggests that, you know, tensions are starting to rise higher than they have been. There have been some interesting news stories, though, underlying some of this, some of them quite amusing, because of Russia's and the old Soviet Union's makeup. The Ukraine had some refurbishment and aerospace business that it was taking from Croatia, and it has a couple of their MiG-21 BizDs out there being refurbished, and they're not going back, and the press are speculating that they're hanging on to them so they can use them. But slightly more bizarrely, of course, is the story that I think most of us saw unfold a week or two ago, was the selling of the Tu-95 bomber on eBay that apparently, and I say apparently, Ukraine are just about to list a sale price of $3 million. Again, we would probably suggest that they hang on to that or certainly keep it for the moment. But on a serious note, yeah, the tension is riding high. The F-16s are now out there, the American F-16s. I think we've got Typhoons over the Baltic doing some policing,
not,
I believe.
Not yet. They're going to make a decision next week on we've offered four Typhoons, and the decision is whether NATO accepts them, is next week.
Right, okay. Well, we'll watch out for that one. But from the space perspective, we've recently seen the latest Soyuz launch to the ISS, which of course carried a US astronaut. And for anyone who saw that that launch, very spectacular, a lot of publicity about the fact that they didn't do the direct shot, which is not totally unusual for a Soyuz rocket. It's the way it used to be done. I personally wouldn't want to do 34 circuits of the Earth in that, but unfortunately they had a minor failure on a booster that didn't allow them to do the straight to the ISS hit. But American astronaut on board, and amongst all of the tensions in the Ukraine, this seems to be working very well. Lots of smiles, NASA and Roscosmos patting each other on the back about how well they're working together. And of course, we've got the ISS floating above us, looking down on us with a joint crew. I did interestingly watch the program on Channel 4 in the UK recently about the ISS, which was actually excellent. And hopefully others around the world got to see or will get to see that. But I took from that some really interesting views, and that was that they do keep well apart up there. Although they're all on the same craft, it's very clear that you're either in the Russian or the American section, and never the twain shall meet unless there's a publicity shot being taken. So, interestingly, I don't think it's the Ukraine, but even up on the ISS, there are some tensions, I think, about whether you're in the US, the European, the Japanese, or the Russian part of the space station. But that said, there is a great deal at stake for both the Americans and the Russians with the space programs. And of course, we've seen the Americans now take the hand to return to manned rocket launches themselves, and hopefully in the next, I think, year or two, they'll be looking to do that themselves and not relying on the Russians.
Well, it's fascinating stuff, and certainly something that we'll be keeping an eye on. I think we're going to try and get another space special down, aren't we, at some point in the next few months. So I'm sure that's a topic that we'll revisit. Finally, for this episode's news, a story that has certainly massively caught my imagination, because it's something I'm hugely interested in, and certainly from the internet today it's had a lot of coverage. Anybody that's interested in black aircraft projects, that, you know, things like Aurora, Have Blue, Have Donut, these are all names that people will have recognized from the mysteries of Tonopah and Area 51, all these sorts of places. But when Bill Sweetman blogs about a mystery aircraft over Texas, Tim, if you're interested in that kind of thing, you take notice, don't you?
That's right. Aviation Week again has caused the internet to melt down. They had a very interesting story here about some photographs over Amarillo in Texas, taken on March 10th, which seemed to show three aircraft flying in formation. A close-up of one of them seemed to show what was a unique bat-winged type aircraft no one had sort of seen before. With it being in formation, and there's apparently some sort of the person who took there's some audio that was flying around at the same time that people think it might be connected. So there's some sort of speculation that it perhaps might be a manned platform. So two and two together, does it make four? When you look at the budget lines for all the classified stuff that the USAF is working on, and you see what's released in the white world as it is, there's obviously a hell of a lot going on in the desert in Nevada and places like Area 51 that we don't know about, highly classified. So that could be something that maybe is a developmental aircraft. It could be even operational. And there's one interesting fact there that the F-117 has been retired since, what was it, 2006 or 2004?
Or has it?
Well, this is the internet. It's officially stood down, and you know, the jets have been into storage, but people have sort of started sort of seeing them appear here and there. And there's an interesting thing is if you maybe want something that's a sort of a chase plane for another stealth aircraft, or if you had the F-117 flying with another more classified design, and somebody did spot it in the daytime and spot the really sort of secret one, you could just say, oh well, that's the F-117, you know, oh it's doing a bit of a test flight for us, and you've therefore got a plausible cover story. So yeah, interesting stuff. We'll be watching this. I think it's probably the most convincing evidence of a black project since the 1989 sighting, where they had a guy who's in the Royal Observer Corps who spotted a black triangle refueling with a couple of F-111s over the North Sea. You know, completely sort of fluke. You know, to place for a trained aircraft observer to be, and he was in the right place at the right time and described what he had never seen before. So maybe they're out there.
I'll tell you what, let's hope so. Steve Douglas, who's one of the chaps that took one of the pictures, is a bit of a sort of Tonopah stroke Area 51 legend. We'll put some links on the website, but his site, dreamlandresort.com, is absolutely fascinating. You could easily lose a sort of evening or two or three or four going through that stuff, and it's absolutely fascinating. And hey, who knows, in a few years' time, maybe whatever it is that's in this picture will be revealed. We shall see. But that's the end of the news.
Thing 1 and 2, check by reference 320. Thing 1 and 2, reference 300. Bumper, Thing 1, picture.
Bumper, single group, bullseye 05036, low, north group.
Thing 2, target group, bullseye 04737, 3000.
2.
Thing 2, hot right 20 scope.
2.
Thing 1, spike 090. 15, 3000.
Upper pop-up group, bullseye 09558. Reach out.
Thing 1. Thing 2, bogey node. South group, correction, north group leaning on Thing 1.
Thing 2, group, bra 02917, 3000, hostile. Track west.
From across the globe, from the center of aerospace, and now to you.
Welcome from the Royal Aeronautical Society. The Royal Aeronautical Society is the world's only professional body dedicated to the entire aerospace community. Established in 1866 to further the art, science and engineering of aeronautics, the Society has remained at the forefront of developments in aerospace. We will bring you multimedia, lectures and discussion from inside the world of aviation, aeronautics and space. If you enjoy our content, please consider showing your support for the Society. If you have an interest in aerospace, find out about the professional and personal benefits that Society membership offers. Visit www.aerosociety.com.
So moving on to our first feature tonight, last month an absolutely legendary aircraft flew its final commercial trips. It was, of course, the DC-10. It happened on my doorstep at Birmingham Airport with a series of flights for enthusiasts, as much as anything. Tim, you were on that last flight and you spoke to Janice Long, who most people will know more as a DJ, but what was her DC-10 connection?
Yeah, well, that was incredible. She was actually, had been very briefly, a flight attendant on Laker Airways. So Laker SkyTrain, obviously one of the pioneers of the low-cost flights, transatlantic low-cost flights as well, which nobody's really sort of tried to emulate. So I got to sit down and have a great chat with her about the golden age of DC-10 flying.
Okay, I'm here with Janice Long.
Hi.
Radio 2 DJ and former DC-10 flight attendant.
I was. I joined, it was Laker Airways, flight attendant for, or air stewardess as we call them then, and I joined when I was 18.
Wow. What do you remember about the DC-10 in those days?
Well, I just remember the absolute, I was too totally in awe of it because it's this huge beast. And I preferred it to the 707s and the 111s because it was this huge plane carrying 345 people. And we used to get on and we used to get tested so that we knew all of the safety things, where the dinghies was and the, you know, the axe and goodness knows what else. And then you would be allocated your position. And I was always a number seven, which meant I was in charge of movies.
Oh,
so
wow.
I used to have to go down into the hold in a little lift and I would get the movie out and put it into the projector. And it was a touch of class with Linda Jackson, which I've probably seen about 40 or 50 times. I mean, obviously, I did cabin service as well. And there were 10 stewardesses. And I always remember one particular flight where the captain called the stewardesses in and said, look, we're flying through the Aurora Borealis. And we were just, it was just like this grotto, this amazing, you know, cluster of lights around us. And he said, look, this is too good an opportunity. All of the passengers have to see this. So one at a time, 345 passengers went through the cockpit, went in and went, wow, and came out again. It was a great moment.
What was kind of Laker? Did you ever get to meet a Freddie Laker?
Yes, I did. He was a wonderful man. He often came on flights. And in fact, one day he took the stewardesses out to Mallorca on a flight just as a kind of treat, to, you know, for everybody. Very much a man of the people. I think he did amazing things for aviation because he introduced flying to people who could not normally, you know, afford it. You can afford to go to New York or Toronto, and so people all of a sudden could. They get their 75 quid ticket, you know, on the gate kind of thing, and walk through. And I think without him, you wouldn't have the likes of Branson doing it and others. And it's sad that the big guns really didn't want him around, and they elbowed him out.
That's right. Yeah. So you're here on the last flight now.
I am.
Great atmosphere.
With my colleague Alex Lester from Radio 2, the pair
right,
of us.
Okay. So, you know, you found out of this and decided you had to be on it, or...?
Well, my friend Chris is a real aviation geek. And in fact, you know, we go and watch planes at the end of runways for his birthday. And he found out about it. And the next thing I was asked, that they'd heard that I was a stewardess. So they invited me. And what's really for me today is I was never allowed to make an, not never allowed, but I never made an announcement because I was a number seven. And so I've actually made an announcement today for the first time. It's really hard. I was trying to read the handwriting of the person who'd written. So that's good. But I'm just astonished more than anything about the frenzy that's going on. As soon as the captain allowed people to get up and, you know, release their seat, but people have been photographing anything and everything. They're photographing the catches on the lockers, and they're photographing seat numbers, which, you know, I've never seen this on a plane, obviously, before. And I was thinking before, why don't they sit down? It's going to go, you know, it's going to topple or something. But it's all perfectly fine. But yeah, wonderful to see people who are really in love with it, and, you know, really celebrating the day. And before we came on, I didn't get a slice of it, but there was a cake with models of DC-10s made out of icing sugar. Yeah, it's a great celebration, and it's sad that it's going to be scrapped.
What was the interior of the kind of Lakers on Sky?
It certainly wasn't 70s. That's very sort of, I think that's the kind of thing my mum had as curtains back in the 70s. Do you know, I can't remember the decor. I really, really can't. I think it was more subtle. I don't think it was as, you know, flowery. It was chintzy.
So you joined, obviously, very young. Did you not kind of think of perhaps going on and being a sort of a flight attendant, or...?
Well, I mean, I was a flight attendant, but I didn't want to go any sort of further with it because it sounds ridiculous. But I left to travel, and I left to hitch to Greece, but ran out of money and ended up living in Amsterdam for a year in a tent. So it was quite a different lifestyle, as you can imagine.
Thanks very much for your time.
You're very, very welcome.
It's Tim. Come on. The aircraft entered service in 1971. The decor, because I saw the pictures, was pretty incredible. But how was the flight?
It was pretty cool, actually. Yeah, I mean, it's a good, solid aircraft. I was a bit concerned at one point because we got airborne, and then about sort of 200 odd sort of aviation enthusiasts all rushed to the front of the cockpit because they thought they might be able to get a cockpit photo. So I imagine at that point there was some pretty amazing sort of center of gravity kind of you know, trim going on of what the heck's happening in the back. Yeah, it's just amazing. It's what we take for granted these days. I mean, this actually as well. It was one of the older. It was the last one produced in sort of about 88.
I think it was the number 445 out of 446, I believe.
So it really wasn't, you know, it was obviously within the Binman Bangladesh interior, which is quite sort of flowery, colourful, and sort of looks like a 70s sort of, you know, sort of Indian restaurant. you know, but you know, even in 1988, you know, the IFE, you know, sort of is a drop down projector. You know, that's all you got. You know, and the tiny kind of luggage compartments as well. You know, you look at you go traveling now, and every aircraft has to have these huge bins, luggage bins, over people's heads because people are bringing bigger and bigger bits of luggage in. And these are like absolutely little tiny things, and you think, oh, you know, crikey, you know, how did, you know, when did our expectations have just, you know, increased so much since those days? So really, sort of look interesting sort of time machine back to those sort of, you know, that those age, you know, the golden age of air travel, I suppose.
Yeah, as many of our listeners know, it is my favourite aircraft, and I was devastated not to be on that flight. But really interesting to hear Janice there talking about the love for the aircraft, but also for Laker as well. And I think he was the first to bring the DC-10 over here, wasn't he? So well done on him for doing that. But very sad to see it go. Of course, we still have MD-11s. Flying, but I suppose not for long as well. We thought we'd ask our photographers out there, or any of you with some great DC-10 photos, to send them in to us, and we'll create a directory up on the Facebook page. So if you either post them directly to our Facebook, which is facebook.com/aviationextended, or one word, or email us, get involved at Aviation Extended, and we'll post them up there onto the directory, and let's see who's got the best DC-10 shot.
Are you sure you're going to be able to look at those and remain composed?
I'm very upset.
We've talked about the aircraft a little bit before, Peter. Where did the big attraction come from?
I don't know. I suppose it's one of those heavy aircraft that I suppose when I was younger that would come trundling over my head at the end of the runway at Heathrow, and just was quite awe-inspiring. Of course, there was always the 747, but everyone liked the 747 and everyone knew about the 747. But the DC-10 was a bit different. It was still big and it was still heavy. And it had a slightly different look to it, slightly chunky, not bad looking, but those engines gave an impression of real power. And I don't know, that just always stuck. And I think some of the airlines that flew it back in the day, like Thai, who had that amazing colour scheme, it just looked so grand. And of course, the MD-11 still operating with airlines like KLM. I think the DC-10 and the MD-11 look the best in KLM colours. So, a few things, but just stuck with me, really.
Taking all that into consideration, then, have you got anything to say to Tim? Because he's just told you that the inside of that one looked like a 1970s Indian restaurant.
No, I think I prefer to look at them from the outside. I fully understand, having spent enough time on aircraft in the 80s and 90s, to know exactly what Tim's talking about. And I'm sure it wasn't the greatest of rides certainly in the last decade or so, but in its day, I'm sure that was very new.
Thank you. Watch 032-34-3000. Thank you, press. Status was. Unable shot. Stand by 10 seconds. Thank you. Fox 2 group, bullseye 022-30. Thank you, Sally. Thank you, Fox 2.
Thumper new picture. Two groups, azimuth 21, north group bullseye 085-37, 1,300. South group 22,000. Awesome, both groups.
Bang one, target north group bullseye 08337.
Bang range 35, north group.
Thing one, thing crank south. Thing two, hold shots. Thing check right, reference 170. Thing one and two, out right. Check right, reference 245. Thing two, left reference 230, 220.
Thing one, range 22, north group.
Thing one. Thing two, target. Supper, thing one, picture.
Supper, two groups, azimuth 22. North group now drag, maneuver drag. Bullseye 08532, low, hostile.
Thing, 40 scope, hot left.
Hot.
40 scope, hot left.
13220, 21,000,
hostile. Targeted group bullseye 131, 12,000. Fang 2, monitor north arm drag, 22,000. Thumper, bogeyed up Fang 2 to the north arm drag.
086, 29 miles, 21,000, hostile.
Fang 2, targeted group bullseye 080, 28, 10,000. Fang 2, split.
Pop-up group, reach in. Bullseye 105, 52, 22,000, hostile.
Two other shots, fourth group. Thank 204, 204. Thank you, reference west.
Well, brilliant stuff, Tim. Thank you for grabbing some time with Janice. And it's probably appropriate. You know, I think we'd probably all agree that the DC-10 would slot nicely into a sort of Legends of Aviation category of some sort. And that's probably a nice segue to move on, Tim, to your interview with John Lira from the Jet Age Museum, because that museum is at Gloucester, and when you're talking about jet aircraft and the genesis of jet aircraft, the name Gloucester is incredibly important, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, that was I came across that really by accident. I was there for Gloucester Airport for something else entirely, and turned out the function was at the Jet Age Museum. They've been open for a sort of limited way for a while now, but they're going to be opening properly in May. So they're going to be sort of fully open, and some really interesting stuff there. Obviously, you've got the Gloucester connection as well, which is the main thing. You know, they've got Gloucester Gladiator, you've got the Meteor, hence the Jet Age Museum. But also, it's the home as well to in the area, in the local area, you've got the landing gear connection. With Messier Doughty,
yep.
And you've also got Smith's. So that's why they've got the Trident cockpit there, because, you know, obviously the Trident was the first Autoland. And they've also got a Vulcan cockpit in there, which I got to sit in and was absolutely great.
Let's listen to what John had to say.
Okay, so I'm here with John Lewis from the Jet Age Museum in Gloucester Airport. Very interesting collection of historic aircraft here. John, tell me what you've got here. What are the great exhibits?
Well, the aircraft we've got actually are built by the Gloucester Aircraft Company, as was, which was in existence from 1917 through to 1960. And in its life, it designed and built many famous aircraft. The Meteor, for example. Britain's first jet aircraft, the E-28, and of course an aircraft that most people are familiar with, the Gloucester Gladiator.
Okay, and how did the collection kind of come together? Whose idea was it?
It was an idea of some local councillors in 1986 to have a museum commemorating aviation in North Gloucestershire, and that's what we've intended to do.
And you've also got a very impressive Vulcan cockpit there that you can actually get in and have a look at. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. It is a Vulcan 2 cockpit section owned by one of our members. The collection isn't only about complete aircraft, but about the types of aircraft which contain components that were built by the local aerospace companies.
And you've already had people, it's already been sort of part opened already, but the big opening is going to be in May.
May the 9th.
So we've got here in front of us right now are Gloucester Javelin, the
E-28,
and the Meteor 8. The world that you can see all three together.
That is correct.
Okay. And, you know, who's who's involved here? Do you have kind of volunteers then that are helping out?
It's been an all-volunteer force from the word go, and we've raised money by various means, donations, grants and so on, in order to put up this nice building, which we now have, okay, which cost around about, so far, £330,000.
Okay. And tell us about some of the other stuff. So you've got a gamecock here.
Yes, the Gloucester Gamecock is a replica. It was built just over 20 years ago. It was taken 20 years to actually build it. It dates, the original aircraft dates from 1925, but none exist. Okay. So we set out to build this replica, which I say took 20 years, and here it is in finished condition. But you will see that one half is completely covered with the fabric. The other half is left open, so people can appreciate the workmanship that goes into such an aircraft.
And that was the RAF's last biplane open cockpit fighter, wasn't it?
No, it was the last all-wooden biplane fighter. The Gladiator next to it was the last metal biplane fighter in RAF existence.
And moving to that then, that's obviously the a Gladiator that's original, or is that all?
The Gladiator is original. It was shot down in 1940 in North Norway, inside the Arctic Circle, close to Bardufoss. And we were given permission by the Norwegian government to recover the wreckage for restoration purposes. It's taken a long, long time to get to this stage, but will eventually be completed, we hope.
So that's going to be an ongoing restoration process?
Yes, for many years to come, I would think.
And that is that the original engine from the same aircraft?
That is an original engine from that site. Yes, it is. We're pretty sure it's the same engine. There were two engines. We've used two to start making up one good one. So it might be the one good one that they were making up, or it might be the one that's being used as spares. But yes, it is. It's from that aircraft.
And what about the Hurricane that you've got there? That's a replica?
The Hurricane is a replica that was built for the film Battle of Britain, which was around about 1967-68. And we acquired it for £2,000. The outer wings, sadly, had been damaged beyond repair, which is why you see it in the way it is today. But it represents a Hurricane of 501 County of Gloucester Squadron.
Ah, okay.
And in this particular case, flown by a chap called Mackenzie. And Mackenzie actually ran out of ammunition while in a dogfight with a German ME-109. And so he managed to knock the tail off the ME-109 with his wingtip. German aircraft crashed in the sea, and he crash landed on Dover Cliffs.
Wow.
Yes. So he was well known for that, and that was called Mackenzie's Knock, K-N-O-C-K, Mackenzie's Knock, because he knocked the aircraft out, the German aircraft out of the sky. Yeah, so that's those there. These you've looked at. The E-28, they built two to flight Frank Whittle's jet engine invention. They built two here in Gloucester to flight test the engine. One of them crashed, unfortunately, and the other one went into the Science Museum in 1946, where it still resides. So this is a replica.
I think this is a very high-spec replica to me.
It's good, isn't it? Yes.
You've got the rivets, you've got the landing gear.
One of our chaps, I said it really has to look original, real. And one of our guys designed a little tool for making all of the rivet marks.
Yeah.
And it took him 4 months to put all those rivet lines in so that it looks really authentic.
That's incredible. Yeah.
And all that information there on the rivets and so on was taken from original drawings, which we do have.
And up to Meteor, so tell me a little bit about those. So,
well, the Meteor in here is the Meteor 8. It's Meteor. a single-seater.
Okay.
It was a fighter,
yep.
A single-seat fighter. The other Meteors, this one, and the one which is outside there, this one, is a Meteor T7. It's a two-pilot trainer aircraft. So you'd have an instructor and a student flying the aircraft. And this one, readers would know, came in from Imjin Barracks, which is literally a mile down the road,
yep.
where it had been the gate guardian. It had been the gate guard, and it was, because it was going to cost money to bring it around by road, we asked the incumbents at Imjin Barracks if they would fly it in for us underneath a Chinook helicopter.
Wow.
You know, the twin rotor thing.
I think I've seen pictures of that, yes.
You might well have done, because a lot have turned out to watch it. It's only a 2 or 3 minute flight, but they lifted up this thing, this aircraft, brought it over and put it down out there.
Amazing.
Yeah, yeah, it's terrific. You wouldn't see that side again.
No. So as well as this, you've got the... Is that a 111 or a Trident front?
That's a Trident.
Okay.
The Trident was the first commercial airliner to use the Autoland system, which was designed by the then Smith's Industries here at Bishop's Cleeve.
Okay.
So just the street where it was all designed and tested before going into commercial production with the Trident.
Yeah. Excellent. Thank you so much for talking to me.
It's a pleasure.
It's a really fascinating museum. I didn't know I was coming here today.
Oh, well, there you are. That was a little treat for you.
To have a look at it. Thank
yeah.
you. Okay. We've just heard John talking about the museum there, Peter. Yeah, it's just a quick run through. Gloucester E28, Gloucester Javelin, Gamecock, Gladiator, Meteor, Hurricane, Gloucester-built Hawker Hurricane, Gloucester-built Hawker Typhoon. That's a pretty amazing list of aircraft, isn't it?
Yeah, and I visited Gloucester last year, and the Javelin is an aircraft that always grabs me. Again, a bit like the DC-10, it seems to have some muscle about it, and really love that. I think they had a Javelin as a gate guardian there. I don't know if it's the same aircraft that's now moved into the museum. But some interesting things there. I didn't know that Gloucester built Hurricanes, for example, and also a Typhoon as well. So some interesting bits and pieces that came out of that, but certainly one to add to the list.
It's some sort of a real sort of little sort of gem there. So I'm sure that once people sort of discover it and... you know, they've got sort of plans for expansion and getting more acquisitions. It'll only grow in popularity.
It's interesting, isn't it? You know, I think you both just said you almost add it to the list. We are, you know, we're very, very lucky, aren't we, in terms of the museums and the preserved aircraft that we've got in this country.
Yeah, we are. We are. It's interesting. There's a whole round of discussion and debate going on, and our sister program on the Airplane Geeks about. Museums to visit that came out of the top 10 museums in the world to visit. But every time I think of putting something into the show, I feel that very point. We're so lucky. We've got so many great museums here.
Fantastic. Well, good work, Tim, again. And especially as it was kind of a little bit on the off chance, we will put the web link to the museum in the show notes, and they're on Flickr and Facebook as well. And all their opening times and such like are on there. So if you want to make the trip, or if you're in the area, please do go and visit the museum and support them.
Bank 2, Threat Bar, 132-12-20,000.
Bank 1, Fox 3, Bra, Bullseye 060-25-16,000. Bank 2, Hot Left. Bank 2, Executive. Bank 1, 0x1x0. Bank 2, 1x0. Number, Bank 1, picture.
Hot. Number single group bullseye 089-41 at 38,000 hostile.
Thank you. Target group bullseye 087-40,000 hold shots.
Number pop up group bullseye 083-43 24,000 hostile.
One. Two status lock. Thank you. Target group bullseye 077-33-41,000 hostile. Bang, crank, north. Bang, out left.
Hi, this is Diego López Salazar from Aeropodcast, and you're listening to Extended.
So, on to one of our regular features now. I'm going to hand you over to Tim Robinson. It's time for X10.
X10. This is a podcast top trumps for all things aviation. So, this week is our top 10 aviation movies. What are the flying films that make you go laugh, cry, cheer? Let's find out. So, at number 10. The Rocketeer. What? I hear you cry? This Disney gem from 1991 has autogyros, GB racers, Zeppelin, Howard Hughes, Nazis, and a jetpack of the title. It's an aerial Indiana Jones 1930s romp with its tongue well in its cheek. Number 9. Those magnificent men in their flying machines. Terry Thomas, Benny Hill, Eric Sykes, and Gert Frobe, starring this fictionalized recreation of the early pioneering air races. It's all bonkers fun, but having read about it more closely about the era from our archives at the Royal Aeronautical Society, some of it may be closer to what actually happened. Truth, in this case, may be stranger than fiction. Number 8. Hell's Angels. There's no CGI in 1930, so Howard Hughes recreated the First World War in the air for real in California for this aviation epic, amassing a huge collection of surplus planes such as SE-5As and Fokker D-7s, flown by aces who had only 10 years earlier been dicing with death above the trenches for real. Even today, the swirling mass dogfights look amazing, as well as the giant bomber raid and the Zeppelin coming out of the clouds. Fun fact, with World War I air combat footage being rare, documentaries often reuse Hell's Angels footage. It's that authentic. Number 7. Porco Rosso. From the Japanese animation studio, Studio Ghibli, this dreamlike film centers around a mercenary seaplane pilot fighting sky pirates in the Adriatic in the post-World War I era. Oh, and he's a pig. Beautiful and moving, especially when in one particular scene when he flies above the clouds to see ghost planes of his dead war comrades. Number 6, 12 O'Clock High. Fantastic, realistic and gritty study of command in wartime. Gregory Peck is the tough B-17 squadron commander who must balance getting the job done with the odds of his men dying every mission. It's actually been used to teach leadership to real military commanders. Number 5, The Right Stuff. A Demon Lives at the Sound Barrier. Brilliant adaptation of the already brilliant Tom Wolfe book on Jaeger breaking the sound barrier, 50s and 60s test flying, and the early US space program. Fun fact, Chuck Yeager himself played a cameo role as the bartender at Pancho's Place. Number 4. The Dam Busters. The most daring aerial feat of World War II, bar none. Scientific ingenuity, British pluck, and Lancasters. The special effects may have aged a bit, but not the tale of bravery and courage in an unbelievable precision attack. Interesting fact, compare and contrast the Death Star trench run in Star Wars with the dam's attack in Dam Busters. So even some of the dialogue is the same. Number 3. Top Gun. Alright, it may be as cheesy as hell, parodied, sent up, and even thought of having a gay subtext, but put in any aviation buff in the room when Top Gun is on, and they'll go quiet and their eyes will be glued to the screen to watch some of the best dogfights ever committed to celluloid. Fun fact, one of the Navy guys working on the film got into hot water by claiming the jet fuel used was training. But given by the massive jump in US Navy recruitment, that was well worth the money. Number 2. Airplane. Madcap and Marvelous, this mile-high comedy was a spoof of the earnest airport disaster movies of the 1970s and had gags in it. Any aviation buff who doesn't last elastic laughter's exchanges like "We have our clearance, Clarence. What's our vector, Victor?" probably needs to stop counting those rivets. And coming in at number 1, have you guessed it? Battle of Britain. The most famous air battle in history deserves the number 1 spot. From launching the warbird preservation scene in Europe, to that unforgettable music score, to Susanna York's "Don't you shout at me, Mr. Warwick!" after an air raid, just perfect. Interesting fact, in 1969, when it first came out, they had to make a promo for a film with Michael Caine explaining to non-UK audiences, I'm looking at you, America, what the Battle of Britain actually was. So what do you think, guys? Any thoughts? What's your favourites?
I thought you'd missed the Battle of Britain. I didn't think you would front Brit for number one, but yeah, it was my number one. It was the first one I wrote down when you started speaking. Top Gun, cheesy, yeah, but love it, and Dam Busters as well. One that I wrote down as I was thinking, what would I like? And I'm not quite sure it's a total aeroplane film, but there was the Battle of Midway as well. I loved that. I loved some of those scenes, some of the flying scenes on that. Never heard of that Japanese film you mentioned at number 8, I think.
Porco Rosso, yes. It's a weird concept. It's a pig that flies a a seaplane and battles pirates. But it's such a beautiful film, and it's also there's a great sort of like engineering. You know, the director really does know and love his aircraft. So they're all the hero's aircraft looks like a, you know, Caproni kind of seaplane. You know, World War One Caproni seaplane. All the other aircraft sort of take their cues from aircraft of the time. And there's even a little bit where about sort of the, you know, the you know, aircraft design in it. Sort of, you know, the young girl who's in it is actually sort of like a keen aircraft designer. It's great.
Yeah, wow. What about you, Gareth?
I wrote Iron Eagle down on my pad.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Now, I have to say, I'm gonna bet here that it might not have stood the test of time, but when it came out as a sort of more junior av geek, I was incredibly excited. I'm gonna put my hand up and admit that, and I'm quite prepared to get a grilling from fans of the Battle of Britain and the Dam Busters, that the Right Stuff is undoubtedly my all-time favourite aviation movie.
Ooh.
It's tricky though, because you could probably watch all 10 of those and enjoy them all. And to put one at the top is quite tricky, but be good to hear what the listeners have to say.
No, I would love to hear that. So, you know, what's your favourite? Do you agree with Tim? Do you agree with what Peter and I have said? What else have we missed? You know, get in touch, tweet us, Facebook, through the website. We'd love to hear what you've got to say. But Tim, well done, mate. That was spectacular. Brilliant.
Yeah, really enjoyed that. Well done.
I'm Peter Dixon, and I listen to Extended, the ETOPS Aviation Podcast.
Bang, follow on group, range 17, 24,000.
Bang one. Joker. Please. Save fuel. 9.5. Bang two, target group bullseye, 073, 27,40,000, short gate. Bang one and two, high left. Bang two, target group bullseye, 03, 050, 21,42,000.
Trail group range 15, 24,000.
You got a shot there? Negative shot, two stroke. Two spike.
Two spike range, 6 miles. 40,000. Bang, airspace west.
Bang two, notch it south. Hot left, target 40,000. Check in. Shoot.
Bang two, threat north two.
Bang two, target in third. Bang two, unable shot. Status. Bang two, unable shots.
Bang 2, additional threat, Brawl 129, 15 miles, low 4,000. Stopper copies, knock it off.
2's off.
Extended. It's time to talk aviation. Email us now. Get involved at aviation-extended.co.uk. And remember, there's no E at the beginning of Extended. Aviation questions, suggested topics, or even good old feedback are all welcome.
Okay, it's time to get involved. Now, our feedback section of the show, and as ever, myself, Peter, and Tim are extremely grateful. Again, we've got loads of feedback to get through. I know the guys agree with me. It's lovely to hear from you in between episodes and after we publish episodes. It's, you know, it's nice to know that people are listening and hopefully are enjoying what we're doing. So I'm going to start with this. There is quite a lot to get through. I'm going to start with a lovely email from Paul McConnon, who was listening to episode 22 on an A321 Lufthansa flight from Frankfurt to Malta with a beer in one hand, presumably holding his iPod or something in the other, and heard his name mentioned that he'd won a copy of Doug Worrell's book. So that's quite cool. Has anybody else listened to Extended whilst flying? That was just something that popped into my head.
It's obviously lucky. It's obviously it's obviously lucky to listen to podcasts while you're flying, and then you win things.
Well, Paul lives in Stockholm, so I believe we've sent his copy of Doug's book to his parents in Edinburgh, and hopefully his niece is going to benefit from that. And Paul, you say that you kind of started doing your PPL and then stopped, and you know you kind of get your ad fix now from the podcasts and magazines, etc. So delighted to help. Great to know that you're a fan of Roland White, which is something that I know we hear quite a lot. And he's bought Vulcan 607. He hasn't started it yet, but he's going too soon. So Paul, do let us know what you think. And Tim, Peter, what's he going to think of Vulcan 607?
He'll love it. Love it. He also mentions in his letter that he's looking for people in flying clubs in Stockholm, and would there be anyone out there? He'd love to hear from them. Try Maria Garcia, who has the website flightcheek.com. She might be able to help you.
Nice one, and we'll put that on the we'll include that in the show notes as well, Peter.
Yeah.
But thanks for your email, Paul. Ian Kershaw, regular correspondent with Extended, a friend of his recently went to Udvarhazy, to the museum, shot some pictures of the shuttle Discovery, which Ian tells us it really captured the sort of ruggedness of the shuttle, and that's something I know you guys will have seen as well. You know, when you see some of the images of the shuttle, particularly after it had flown a mission, it really looks quite sort of dirty and it certainly looks like it's been on a trip, doesn't it? Ian also tells us that a friend of his bought a quadcopter. Now that's something that I would quite like to get and have a play with, I have to say, and I believe he's got some video which we might be able to share. Have you you thought about dabbling with a quadcopter at all, chaps?
Oh, my brother's got one, and he's got a GoPro that you can control with your iPhone. It's very impressive. It's very impressive. Unfortunately, I have neither the money nor the skill to deliver that. So I'm just going to stand back and watch those best suited. But there was an interesting segment over on the UAV Digest last week about quadcopters being used with autistic children because they can, you know, to use their to develop their skills and that sort of thing, which I thought was a very interesting use of drones.
Wow. That's fantastic. Anyway, Ian's going to, I think, try and pass some of those shuttle images that I mentioned onto Mike Mullane. He's Ian's just finished writing Rockets for the second time, and Hey Ho is a quarter of the way through reading Vulcan 607 again. So that book is not going to go away, is it? Ian also tells us, which I thought was fascinating, that he's got goes a little bit back to the Jet Age Museum, Tim. He's got a 1959 copy of Flight magazine, which has an in-depth article on the Buccaneer, and he says what those guys did with pencil slide rules and drafting boards was absolutely incredible. And what an era that was, Tim, eh?
Well, the Buccaneer, yeah. I mean... that's a grudge. It's a great aircraft. It wasn't built. It was just kind of hewn out of rock. You know, great stuff. And you know, and it's got an internal bay. It's it's weird. I was thinking with the DC-10 actually. It goes back to sort of DC-10 is some of the aircraft. We're not particularly interested in today. Like I mean, for example, you know, F-35. It's got a lot of flak. It's drawn a lot of criticism, et cetera, et cetera. And you know, the DC-10 was like grounded. You know, it was seen as dangerous, a death trap, et cetera, et cetera. You know, the cargo door had to be redesigned, all the rest of it. And now, you know, kind of people are, you know, there was I don't know how many people, there was, you know, 1,500 people who came from all around the world just to go in the last last few flights. So, you know, I wonder how these things will change over time.
Ian also got himself a copy of Doug's book, and you'll be able to hear a little bit later about how you could do that. But brilliantly, he's passed it on to a friend of him who's he describes as being a very reluctant and anxious air traveller. Hopefully Doug's book will do him some good, and Ian's going to let us know how he gets on. Ian, as ever, thanks for thanks for getting in touch. Absolutely brilliant. On to Twitter. Peter, we were particularly pleased to hear from Mark Maiden, weren't we, who had been had a bit of a break from sort of flying and podcasting, etc., and I think was having a sort of mass catch-up session by the sound of it.
Yeah, he was catching up on the programme. He's a great supporter of the show, produces a very, very novel and concise summary of his flying experiences on a podcast called the Maiden Flight Podcast. He's taken a little break, and we've heard the good news that he'll be back soon. So looking forward to seeing Mark back on the airwaves.
Hear, hear. Glenn Towler's competition prize is I Love V-Bombers t-shirt arrived safe and sound, and he tweeted us a picture to prove it, and that was just, we had loads of shout outs in the last month, lots of people praising episode 23, probably because I wasn't on it, and that was from particularly nice messages from Neil Graham, Joseph Chung, Grant McHaren, Stephen Taylor, the aforementioned Mark Maiden, and others. So thank you all very much, and please do keep your tweets coming in. We do read them, and if you've got anything you want to ask us, it's a great way of getting in touch with us, as of course is Facebook. And we've had some lovely stuff recently, particularly I think it's fair to say from Dave Homewood, who's involved or is the Wings Over New Zealand podcast, who also just finished listening to episode 23. He got a couple of mentions. That's probably why he dropped us a line. I'm joking, Dave. Obviously, he sent us some brilliant words about the short Singapore 3 that was mentioned in the seaplane list. As he said, a classic British 1930s flying boat, four Rolls Royce Kestrel engines, two pushing, two pulling, big biplane wings, three tails, elegance and grace. They don't make them like that anymore, Tim, do they?
No, I think if you want to know anything about aviation in that part of the world, in particularly New Zealand, and he's got a great knowledge of particularly the Second World War aircraft. Great little podcast as well. Lovely listen. So well done, Dave.
Yeah, some fantastic historical information that he's sent through here. So I think as long as Dave doesn't mind, we might put his quite lengthy message maybe into the show notes. Cause I think people will genuinely find that really interesting. You know, even talking about, and I guess it's topical back to the MH370, about the first Fijian based Royal New Zealand Air Force patrol squadrons, and those squadrons still exist today flying the Lockheed P3. So, you know, incredible sort of maritime heritage there, I guess, for the New Zealand Air Force. Dave also talked to us about the top 10 scariest airfields, Tim, which would have been an X-10 classic, talking about the Antarctic runway that's used by the Royal New Zealand Air Force's C-130H Hercules, and also the Boeing 757s when they supply the scientific
research. That's right, they land a 757 down there.
And he says... my understanding is the scariest thing with this airfield is that when you fly from New Zealand, there is a point of no return where you can no longer turn back if the weather down there clags in due to fuel shortage. This happened very recently to one of our 757s, which was past the point of no return and had to risk the ice landing. Thankfully, the pilots are capable of extreme weather flying and did well, but Dave thinks that's far more scary than actually sinking into the ice after you've landed. So, some really
no ILS system there, is there?
No, so. I would imagine not. So brilliant stuff. We have never been scared, I think, on Extended of dealing with the good and the bad. And when you do something like this, you stick your head above the parapet, and it's all very well accepting the praise, and we're very lucky that we get our fair share of that. Hey, you get some knockers as well, and we've had one in the last month. I'm not going to mention his name, but for somebody that had never followed us on Twitter, never spoken to us on Twitter or anything like that, we chuckled a bit to hear that there were too many ums and ahs, and that he hashtagged us irritating. So you're probably not going to be listening to this, but thanks for your feedback. There's a few people who know who he is, and we do appreciate it. We do our best. We'll keep trying to do our best and keep getting the podcast out there. And as ever, if you've got feedback, good or bad, contact us through social media or through get involved at aviation-extended.co.uk.
Constructive criticism is is always appreciated.
Exactly.
Aviation media has long been the domain of the newspapers and magazines.
Well, not anymore. I'm Steve Vischer.
And I'm Grant McCarran, and we're bringing aviation right into your radio.
Yes, we're making aviation cool and interesting for everyone.
Hang on, aviation's always been cool. Check this out.
How cool is this?
Grant, turn that down. Here at Plane Crazy Down Under, we've got pilots, engineers, air traffic controllers, industry leaders, even politicians dropping by to talk to us about the amazing world of aviation right here in Australia and occasionally in New Zealand as well.
Wow, that's cooler than I thought, mate.
Find us at planecrazydownunder.com, on iTunes, or lurking about on other people's podcasts just like this one.
We've got crazy accents and lots of great aviation content.
And we promise not to talk about the cricket.
No, never, not the cricket.
Quack, 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 quack.
What is cricket anyhow?
Something we win a lot. Oh, there
we go.
Now this is our normal slot where we'd be promoting aerospace, but nobody has come and thrown their project in our face this month, so this could be your slot next time out. So if you want your name here, your project here, your company here, whatever it might be, and if you want your logo and link to be on our website, then you need to get in touch through all the normal methods, and we'll arrange to promote you in this very slot. So it's currently left intentionally blank, but this could be you next month. One thing we are planning, I'm going to come to you on this one, Peter.
Okay.
Is a bit of a brainwave in terms of how people might be able to support the podcast. Now, the main brainwave was you thinking of different ways that people can get involved. All I did was come up with this ridiculous name, which is aviation related, which is Fox 1, Fox 2, Fox 3. Which, Tim, explain for anyone that doesn't know what Fox 1, Fox 2, Fox 3 means.
They are different codes for missile launch in brevity codes. Fox 2 is Sidewinder, heat-seeking missile launch. Fox 1, and I'm going to have to think of this here, is...
No pressure.
No pressure. I think that is...
radar launch?
A semi-active radar-guided missile. So that would be like a sort of Sparrow, and Fox 3, I think, is a fully radar active. So it would be like a Phoenix or a AMRAAM, active radar guided missile. Phew!
Well, tell you what, with no preparation, you've done well there, Peter. We're not ready to do this yet, are we? But we have got.
No.
I just want to give people a heads up. We've got some ideas of how. Yeah, they can support us, and we can all work a bit more closely together.
Yeah, well, we've had a lot of support from organisations, guests, and promoters who have helped us to promote the programme on websites, blogs, and other programmes. And we've also had the odd donation to help go to the fund, because the equipment, the travel, the interviews isn't always done as part of our day jobs, and that is funded directly out of our pockets. Some of the equipment isn't cheap. We always want to improve what we're doing, and so whilst we're prepared to make an investment to do this, sometimes a little bit of help in terms of financing server costs and things like that, something we're always looking for. And so we came up with the idea of having Friends of Extended, and I've got to credit you, Gareth, with that, Fox, Friends of Extended, and having three different levels. So rather than us looking for a single sponsor to sponsor the program for a period of time, we will look for small donations or contributions from either individuals or organizations. And we would have different levels. So maybe somebody promoting us on their blog or their website will be a Fox 1, a Friend of Extended level 1. And maybe somebody who makes a small contribution, maybe pence or euros or pounds or dollars, maybe a Fox 2.
Lira.
Sorry?
Lira.
Yes, of course. How could I forget? Guilders and francs and Deutsche Marks. Yeah. And bitcoins. We'll take anything. Yeah. No, seriously. And of course, we do have organizations and individuals, people like Doug Worrell, who have been exceptionally generous in supporting the show. Roland White is another guest who's dug deep to provide things like prizes. These all cost money. Posting things to other parts of the world costs us a lot of money. So we're very grateful for those people who do support us, but we do need to keep all of that going. And unfortunately, it costs money. So we're coming up with a little scheme to do that. And for each of those levels, we would also give something back. So it may be in the form of some sort of recognition, it may be in some sort of advertising, or it may be in some sort of goodie as well. So we'd love to hear your thoughts on that, and hopefully we'll have a little bit more for you in the coming months.
And obviously, if you were to donate a flight in a Spitfire, that would be Fox 10.
Exactly. Fox off the scale.
So hopefully we'll develop that in the coming months. So let us know your thoughts, and whether you think it's a good idea, or you've got any ideas like that that maybe we can work with.
Hear, hear. Let's just quickly talk about one of the aforementioned, Doug Worrell. Doug's brilliant book, Dragons of Thin Air. It's designed to help those, you know, the one in four people that are afraid of flying. As you'll have already gathered or heard in previous episodes, Doug very kindly supplied us with a number of copies of the book to give away to extended listeners. And this time out, that book is going to, and you're going to have to forgive me, Ian, if I'm not pronouncing your surname correctly, Ian Grosz, G-R-O-S-Z. Ian is at Osterpilot on Twitter. He is chairman of the Takeoff Trust, which is dedicated to helping youngsters get into the cockpit, and is based in Scotland. Ian, you've won a copy of Dragons of Thin Air this month. We've given, I think that'll be the fourth or fifth copy that we've given away. We've still got more copies. So listen, send us an email and tell us why you think a copy of Dragons of Thin Air will be useful to you. Or even better, because you will jump straight to the top of the queue, using the little tab on the website, send us an audio message and tell us why you think a copy of Dragons of Thin Air would be useful either to you or somebody that you know who maybe is afraid of flying. One such person, sorry, I should just add, if you don't win one, you can buy the book through the Amazon link on our website. One person who did that was our listener, Ted Shepherd. He actually bought Roland White's book, The Big Book of Flight. I think that might be as well, possibly. He might have bought both books and thanked us as well. So well done, Ted, thank you very much for that.
Yeah, thanks, Ted.
So before we go, because we are getting close to the end, Tim, is there anything, an aerospace topic or anything that you would like to promote this month?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've already given them a sort of a plug anyway, but I'd say go along to the Jet Age Museum and check it out. Like I say, they you know, they've had sort of limited opening hours before. And it's a real sort of little undiscovered sort of aviation gem. So, well worth visiting.
Well said. And Peter, how about your good self?
Yeah, a couple of mentions. But first one, I make no apologies for repeating this mention that we've given to this organisation. And it is to those that look after Lusty Lindy, the Victor XL-231. They were one of our supporters pre-Christmas and donated a T-shirt, which went off to one of our listeners, Glenn, in New Zealand. Unfortunately, got lost in the post, and they very kindly posted another one. Now, I'd just like to say organizations like this are run purely and simply from donations from the public and from charitable sources. And Andre Tempest, who owns Lusty Lindy, has done a fantastic job since buying the aircraft and getting it back to an airworthy condition. So I thought I'd just mention a little bit about the aircraft and what they're doing with it. So, because for those who don't know, it operated with the RAF for 31 years, from 1961 to 93, and it was then purchased, as I said, by Andre Tempest, and it made its final flight to RAF Elvington, where she is now, and it's been kept and returned to flying condition. Now, a little flavour, and I'll do this as quickly as I can, as what return into flying condition means. It means that when they operate it for public demonstrations, it's prepared as if for flight. Now, Wing Commander Barry Neal insists that the aircraft is operated as per the standard operating procedures, and he will only accept the aircraft if it's done to this. So they get the engines running, they get the generators online, they get all the hydraulic systems running, functioning, and up to the correct operating pressures. All the powered flying controls have to be serviceable. All the electrics, avionics are all kept as it was when it was delivered to them in 1993. And then they fire that aircraft down the runway. Now, this is a, I think, 60-ton aircraft when loaded with fuel. It's 85 tons that races down that runway at 130 knots at 100% power. So all of that, and I just say all of that, is because that all has to be funded. And so for Andre and his team to very kindly donate a T-shirt, it gets lost, and then pay for another one to be sent to New Zealand, we're very, very grateful. So a big shout out to Lusty Lindy. Please support her if you can.
Yeah, well said, Peter. Very, very well said indeed. Now, I'm just going to give a quick shout, almost on a similar theme, if you like, to both of those shout outs. This year, as many people know, is the 50th display season for the Red Arrows, and another team will be quite heavily involved in that, I suspect, this year, which is the Nat display team, based at North Weald. They've now got, which is fantastic news, a third aircraft added to the team, G Moore, formerly owned by Pink Floyd legend Dave Gilmour. The aircraft is in the Yellow Jacks, yellow team colours with a black tail, precursor to the Red Arrow. She's going to be staying in that colour this season, but that means they've got three fallen Nats. Again, a hugely expensive venture, absolutely extraordinarily so, but brilliant work, guys, to the team, everyone involved in that restoration and getting that aircraft back up and flying, and can't wait to see you in the air this season, and hopefully I think we might be able to do something with them for extended, so hopefully we'll bring that to you in due course.
Yeah, excellent. Gareth, just before we go out of this section, can I make a bit of a personal plea?
Of course you can.
Thanks. The music for Extended, as we always say, comes from a band called White Hearts, which is a bit close to my heart because it is from the Johnson stable. Unfortunately, it's not from Peter Johnson. It's from my son, Anthony, and he's in a new band, and they released their new single on April the 1st. They're called Mercurial, and their EP is out on April the 1st. So if you like the music you hear on our soundtrack, you'll love this. So please go over and support them on Facebook and Twitter. And if you can get to London to see the launch, do get down there. It's a great show. So thanks.
Fantastic.
For that.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, they've done really well, and they've got some people coming along to see them. So we really hope that we've done our little bit by using their music through their previous White Hearts existence. And, we'll see. Fingers
Fantastic.
Crossed.
Brilliant stuff. So we're nearly at the end, folks. No Pods Challenge this month, but hopefully, and I'm sure it will, Pods Challenge will return in episode 25, so we'll be looking forward to that. Just a reminder, if you'd like to partner the show or get involved, you know, we've got this Friends of Extended stuff coming up, but if you're sat there listening now and thinking, actually, you know, I'd love to get involved with these guys and, you know, maybe see how we can work together and sponsorship or whatever it might be, please drop us a line, get involved at aviation-extended.co.uk. You know, we're always looking for sponsors just for, you know, whether it's a big deal or whether it's for a single episode. So, you know, we've got space coming up, for example, and if that's your sector, maybe you can get involved in our next space special. So get involved at aviation-extended.co.uk. As ever, show notes of this episode with all the accompanying pictures and links, and it's going to be quite a lot of them this month, will be found on the website www.aviation-extended.co.uk and on Facebook, facebook.com/aviationextended. You can find us on Twitter at Aviation Extended, all one word, and please remember there's no E at the beginning of extended. Legal policy and use for our material is all on the website. Please ask us if you want to use anything that you've heard in this episode. Tim, whereabouts can we find your good self and the Aeronautical Society online?
Sure, okay. You can find the website, Aeronautical Society website, on www.aerosociety.com. And I'm tweeting on Twitter at RESTimR.
Peter, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Nascot Hornet. You can find me on the web at xtpmedia.co.uk, or you can come along to our Facebook page, which is XTP Media.
Fantastic. I'm at Gareth_Stringer on Twitter, and you can find Global Aviation Resource at www.globalaviationresource.com. That is the White Hearts that you can hear playing in now. So that means it's the end. So I'm going to say goodnight to Tim Robinson.
Good night from me. See you next time.
Goodbye to Peter Johnson.
And it's good night from me as well. Thank you very much for joining us today.
And it's goodbye from me from the left-hand seat, Gareth Stringer. Enjoyed it very much. See you next time, but remember, stay tuned to this frequency, Extended, the ETOPS aerospace program and Europe's premier aerospace radio station. We'll see you next time.
Extended would like to thank its partners, Global Aviation Resource, the Royal Aeronautical Society, and XTP Media, for their support in helping to present and produce the programme. Thanks for listening to Extended. We'll see you next time. And don't forget, we want you to contact us. So get involved at aviation-extended.co.uk is the email address you need.
Yeah.
Anyway, Gareth, we're all yours.
He's in charge!
It was a nervous laugh, wasn't it?
Yeah, not too bad. Usual rubbish. It's got a bit, obviously, missing airliners, World War III about to break out in the certain parts of the world has made for quite a sort of like a busy week.
Yeah.
Right, sorry, folks, I can't get it to bloody work. Do we think we'll be more than 58 minutes? We probably will, won't we?
Neighbours doing DIY and banging on the wall. I'm going to put my foot through it in a minute. Sorry, just as soon as I'm not talking, I mute the microphone in case it gets louder. Can you hear that?
Yeah.
Is it really loud or not? Is it just, if I'm quiet, it's probably not so bad when I'm talking, is it?
What, you're swearing or the banging? What are we talking about here?
Peter, if you can try and keep your emotions together.
You know, it was obviously within the Binman Bangladesh interior, which is quite sort of flowery, colourful, and sort of looks like a 70s sort of, you know, sort of Indian restaurant.
We just hand it over to Tim. Is it Dave? I keep calling it Steve. Why do I keep calling him Stephen?
Extend it!
This is XTP Media.